Welcome to the May the Smoke Be With You podcast. And now here's your host, Joe Levitt.
Hey guys, Joe with May the Smoke Be With You. Just a little bit different start to this episode here. Wanted to kind of give a little bit of a introduction, if you will, to this episode. This is one of our live episodes from Brisket Love Fest down in Tampa, Florida. While we were there, had the chance to sit down with Anthony DiBernardo from Swig and Swine out of Charleston, South Carolina. I really enjoyed my conversation with Anthony. Great guy, former serviceman, really just a great guy. You know, you meet those people and you just have a connection. You feel like you've known them for a long time. You're immediately just drawn to them as a person, their personality. And Anthony's one of those guys. I'm sure I'm not alone in the way I feel about Anthony. I think a lot of other folks do as well. But shortly after we recorded this episode, and we recorded it last year, just before Thanksgiving, actually, and we're just now kind of getting around to releasing a few of these episodes from Brisket Love Fest, Anthony's son had a really bad skateboarding accident. He has an adult son, Asher, who's a musician, a drummer, and he had a really bad accident. And as part of this, Anthony has used his social media channel to just kind of share the story. So if you feel so inclined, go over to Swig and Swine on Instagram and take a look at the journey that Asher's been on. The recovery, the progress he's making is amazing, but he also has a long road ahead of him as well. And Anthony has been there every step of the way. So you get to see kind of the very early days of this accident, post-accident, I should say, as well as just all the way up to recently when they went to a rehab center in Atlanta, and Anthony is there with him. I'll also put in the show notes their fundraising efforts, so if you are so inclined, feel free to jump over there and give them a follow and help them out if you feel so led to do that as well. Again, really enjoyed this conversation with Anthony. Hope you guys enjoy it as well. And here, sit back and enjoy this episode from Brisket Love Fest in Tampa, Florida. Welcome into this episode of the May the Smoke Be With You podcast. We are once again live from Barbecue Love Fest in Tampa, Florida. Where Danny Hernandez has done an amazing job putting together an incredible first-year festival and has brought in some amazing pitmasters from across the country. And I'm really honored and thrilled to be sitting next to one of those guys, Anthony DiBernardo from Swig and Swine in Charleston, South Carolina. Anthony, yes, welcome sir. In to the podcast.
May the smoke be with you.
And also with you. Man, this is amazing. And what's really cool is this is rare. This is like the first time that I've actually been able to like eat something that the pitmaster made. Like I went over, you know, right now it's things are crazy. They're over there cooking. They're trying to provide samples to tons of people, and these guys are just making time to do this podcast, which I really appreciate. So I walked over there. And I was like, oh, they have the samples out of his whole hog and coleslaw. And earlier I stopped by and you gave me this bite.
Oh,
it was
yeah.
So good.
My new favorite meal.
Oh my word.
So we got this, this Cuban bread from just down the street, this morning, picked it up hot and I opened up the one hog and the fat was just bubbling in the belly cavity. Oh. So I thought to myself, I bet you that would be a really good bite if I just tore off a piece of that Cuban bread that just came in warm,
uh-huh.
And just soaked it in that belly fat, yep. And just ate it, and I was just transported to another universe. It was amazing.
It was so good. The bread wasn't even warm when I had it. You know, it was.
Oh yeah.
But I imagine it was next level when the bread was warm.
It was so good
too.
I sent a video to my wife, and she immediately scheduled my cardiologist appointment next week.
All right, we're gonna pause. They're singing the. Apologize to anyone around here that I was unaware that that was the anthem was happening. We have headphones on and didn't hear, and then but luckily we picked up on that.
I think it was a little delayed. I think it was supposed to happen about 30 minutes ago, but that's okay. At least it happened.
It did happen, and what a great way to help kind of kick off this thing. But as we were saying, like you guys over there, and I got to sample that amazing bite of that Cuban bread, that pork fat, yeah. And just a little morsel of the pulled pork. I mean, it was just, that was a beautiful accident.
Yeah. It trust me, it'll be repeated.
Yeah. It's almost like that's the, you know, if you're doing these, because you said, we were talking earlier, you do these, the whole hogs are more of a catering deal for you. You do them at the shop once a week?
Yeah, we do them at the shop every Thursday.
Yeah.
And then we do the caterings. We do whole hog caterings all over the place. And whenever I do events on the road, I always offer to do the whole hog because it's, you know, it's just a passion
of mine.
It's
special, and it's a cool look, you know.
It's just, you know, and it's like I was talking to Arnis from Evie Mays the other day, and he asked if I ever get tired of cooking whole hog, and I told him it's kind of like him cooking a brisket. You know, you're always out for perfection. You always want to make your next hog the best hog you've ever cooked, and these two today were probably the best hogs I ever cooked. So we're headed in the right direction.
And do you say that like meaning that?
Yeah, meaning that. I mean, it's a craft, and you're always trying to perfect your craft. If you're not, then you're sterile.
Yeah.
I mean, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And that's how I approach everything. You know, my team gets tired of me reinventing processes, and you know, I think we're on our 20th or 21st different process in 10 years for brisket, because there's always a better way to do things in my mind. And the fact that I have a very low self-esteem, so it's never good enough.
But I think it's healthy if you can sit here today and really say, man, this was some of the best whole hogs we've done. And that's not coming from a guy who's done six of them. You know, it's coming from a guy who's done 600 plus or more. Or
and what? It's, you know, there's, and especially at events like this, there's so many different variables.
Yeah,
you come in and maybe the wood's not there that you need, and your start time is delayed. Everything kind of lined up on this one, so I was able to get started at 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon. The temperature was mild. You know, I think we maybe hit 68 last night. Was as cold as it got, so that really helped. You know, just help things along. And I was able to hold it. You know, I was able to hold my shoulders at 225 and my hams at 200 all night long. I finally shut them down at about 6 o'clock this morning, and I went back to the hotel, took a shower, came back, and fired up the skins. But they were good. They turned out well.
So as I'm, as
well, you're
I'm,
eating it. You tell me.
No, I think it's I think it's great. But I want to talk a little bit about like what you want me to taste when I taste this, because there's obviously I'm tasting the pork. It's super moist, but
you know,
there's
the fat. So we mix. I don't season at all. I'll season my skin. I'll salt my skin to dry it out. So after I flip, it helps with the crisping. But the meat itself, I'm not seasoning at all until I pull.
Yep.
So I pull, then I take that into a pan, and then from there I add my seasoning. I just do a little bit of salt, a little bit of pepper, and then our vinegar sauce.
Yeah, that vinegar sauce is so good.
Yeah, so the vinegar is just to help cut the fattiness of the hog, and you know.
Just a little bit of heat. It looks like
there's a little
pepper flake in
little,
there.
A little crushed red peppers and black pepper in there.
But so good, and just... This hog is velvety, like it really is. There's a nice texture to it. So I love that my first experience with you is
there you
one of your best.
Yeah,
like that's amazing.
Yeah, it's all downhill from here.
So Swig and Swine, you guys are kind of a big deal now.
Well, I mean, I don't consider us a big deal. Like
well, you,
I said,
you
I'm,
also said
I'm the guy with the low self-esteem. So, I mean, you know, it's funny because, you know, you just go, you wake up every day and you go to work. And for me, it's a passion. For me, it's survival. You know, it's my name. I'm everything I own is on the line every day.
Yeah.
And it kind of changes your perspective on things when you get to that level. But, you know, it's just one of those things I never realize, and I did an event a couple months ago, and it's the first time anybody came up, like one of the organizers or came up to me, and they're like, you know, we never realized how big you were until we actually Googled you. You know, so I never thought about that. I never Googled myself. And then, so I went home and I Googled myself, and there's a lot of stuff.
Written about you.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff on Google about me, about Swig and Swine. And so that kind of, you know, put things into perspective that we're getting some good traction, and what we're doing is not going unnoticed, and, you know, we're in it for the, I really feel like our culture of our business, we're in it for the right reasons. We're in it for guest service, hospitality, and quality of food, and just, you know, for the love of barbecue. So I think when you boil it down, if you nail those three or four things every day, I think you'll be successful.
All right. So we were talking a little bit last night, talked about the fact that you have 160 team members.
Yes.
Right now. We're going to go back and we're going to talk about the kind of the genesis of Swig and Swine. But right now, because you kind of brought up really what are core values of how you run this business. How do you make sure that team member number one and team member 160 are all kind of pulling in the same direction and hitting these values? Like what are you doing as a leader to make those front of mind for the team?
I mean, I hope that it shows I'm leading by example.
Sure. But you can't be there all the time.
No, definitely not at all. But, you know, communication, like it's a constant line of communication between me and I wouldn't even, you know, we have a pyramid, we have the chain of command, and 9 out of 10 times we don't use it. 9 out of 10 times I go directly to my managers and communicate, you know, what we're doing to them. We got I think 6 different text chains that happen, and the one I use the most is the one that goes to every single GM and every single chef. It's all, there's 15 of us on the group chat. And, you know, that's where I do most of my communicating as far as you know, I try to send out a real positive message in the morning. You know,
what's that look like?
It's usually like 4 a.m.
If I was on that,
let me scroll. I'll scroll back.
Okay.
I'll scroll back on some and see what I can find. I know I sent one out the other day. But it's, you know, it's to me, it's important that they know where I'm coming from.
Yep.
And you know, they buy into it and they follow me, and that's scary at times, you know, because I don't even know where I'm going.
Yeah.
You know, and I got 160 people following me. So this was yesterday at 3:14 a.m.
Okay.
This was as I was drinking my coffee, preparing to drive to Tampa.
Okay.
Lead by example. Plan your work your plan. Constant gentle pressure. Stay calm. We've done Turkey Day 9 years now. Communication is key. Organize, then organize again. So that was my talk for the slaughter that is about to happen in all of our stores starting Monday.
Yes.
It's a huge, you know, our package deals that go out Monday, Tuesday are huge. Our turkey sales are record sales this year. We sold out a couple days ago. And, you know, that's another thing that I stress to my team. Think about Thanksgiving and think about the fact that people are actually trusting you. Mm. They're putting their trust in you to provide the Thanksgiving dinner for their family.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Yeah.
That's an honor.
Yeah.
And it comes with a lot of responsibility.
Yeah. Some of it's because they can't cook.
True.
And they're no good.
True.
But also some of it comes from the fact that you have earned over your time the trust that they're going to, because it's a big deal. You want that meal to be good. And so the fact that they are trusting Swig and Swine to provide the ultimate family meal for the year is a big deal.
Because I tell you, one thing that we do that sets us apart, we actually do a hot pickup the day of Thanksgiving.
Oh, golly.
So,
oh, my word.
Me and my guys, we'll stay up all day Tuesday, all day Wednesday, and we'll cook everything. And then we start smoking turkeys about 10 o'clock Wednesday night at all three locations. And then from 10 to noon, that the next day we do a hot pickup. So people come through in a line, you know, and we greet them and we get their turkeys, all their side dishes and everything out the door. So it's a huge day, you know, and it's, talk about convenience. You literally go home and you put it on the table.
Yeah.
And it's done.
Yeah, because it's 10 to noon. Like, yeah. You know, you can do an early 11 o'clock. You can do 1 o'clock. You can,
yep.
How many of those will you guys do?
Right now, I think we're scheduled to do 220 whole toms, a little over 300 turkey breasts.
Wow.
And then something we added a couple years ago when COVID hit, we did a package. So we're doing a 4-pound sliced turkey package that's available to pick up cold Monday and Tuesday.
Okay.
So we do that package Monday and Tuesday, and I want to say we're close to 300 on those packages.
Wow.
So it's, you know, it's a record year for us as far as Thanksgiving goes. And that's not counting the side dishes. That's not counting, I think the last count I got was 235 pies that we'll bake on Tuesday and Wednesday. So it's, you know, it's...
And you mentioned, you know, you're going to, Thursday, you're there.
Yeah.
For that pickup.
So I go to the original location, and I sit outside in my smoker, and I hand out turkeys when people come in.
And the team has to see that. You know,
if Thanksgiving is strictly voluntary. If they want to work Thanksgiving, then they volunteer and come in.
Great.
They get paid.
Sure, but
we're
not
scheduling
them.
And the customers that come through tip very well. So
okay.
It's become a day that everybody
like,
wants to
wait,
work.
Wait, can I sign up for that day?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
So,
but the fact is that you're not at home.
Right.
You're not just saying, hey, team, go out and do this. You know, in the midst of it, you had the foresight as a leader to know what's around the corner. Hey, we're about ready to get into it next week. This is Turkey Day. We know what's coming. And hey, guys, work the plan, stay calm. It's going to be crazy. Lean on each other, gentle pressure.
But we've done it. This is the ninth year that we've done it. So,
you
know, and that's why I still go back to the original location because that's where I started it. So it's, you know.
Today's episode is sponsored by Tent Craft. Hey, attention, barbecue comp teams, barbecue brands, and business owners of all kinds. If you take your show on the road, you need to make sure you are repping your brand with the best custom tent in the game. The folks at Tent Craft make their tents from the frame to the canopy, all in Traverse City, Michigan. This veteran-owned small business works with small brands like Little Ol' Me, all the way up to the big boy brands that you know and recognize. Listen, their tents will not be the cheapest, but they will be the best, and they back it with amazing customer service. The team at Tent Craft still believes in delivering a great product at a fair price and making it all from start to finish with American labor. If you want to see what the folks at Tent Craft can do to make your custom tent dreams come true, then reach out to them to get a free quote just like I did. Mention May the Smoke Be With You and get 15% off your custom tent. That's a great deal. Again, mention May the Smoke Be With You if you reach out to get your free quote and you will get 15% off your custom tent. Go to tentcraft.com today to get started. Well, let's talk about where you started in barbecue. Like, where did you fall in love? It's a question I ask a lot of folks, but where did you kind of fall in love with smoke and fire?
Well, I think it all just stems from my original love of food to start with. And, you know, I fell in love with food early on. My grandmother immigrated from Italy in, I think, 1907 to Philadelphia, where she met my grandfather, who also immigrated.
Who had another great Italian name.
So he immigrated to Philadelphia as well, and they met there, and so my family started there. But, you know, just the Italian heritage and the love of pig in the Italian heritage.
Yeah.
My sister ended up marrying a German, and they had a farm, and they raised hogs. And every October, my father would go over. He was at one point in time, he was a butcher.
Okay.
So he would set up a refrigerated trailer, and we would do the slaughter and the butchery right there.
Oh, wow.
So that was, I think I was 10 or 11 the first time I experienced that.
Yep.
So it just grew from there, and just my grandmother's cooking, and my mother's parents died young, when she was young, so she learned how to cook from my grandmother. And so just the love of food there. I started working in commercial kitchens when I was 12. My mother would drop me off before she went to work. She worked a night shift at the grocery stores. And after school, she would take me to Ron Jaworski, the old quarterback for the Eagles.
Yeah.
Had a country club where I grew up called the Eagles Nest.
Okay.
And she would drop me off there, and I would work in the prep kitchen, scrubbing pots, chopping vegetables for banquets, And then my dad would come and pick me up later on that night when I was done.
Okay.
And so that was my first commercial kitchen experience, and that transitioned into working on the hotline. And then that was my career during high school. That's what I did. I worked.
Yeah.
When it came time to go to culinary school, I didn't want to waste my parents' money because I wasn't a good student.
Okay.
And,
that was nice of you.
Yeah. A very blue collar family. I didn't want anybody, to have bills.
Yeah.
Because
culinary school is not cheap.
No.
It's kind of crazy, how much folks pay to do this and then get out and they're not making.
No.
Bank when they get out.
And I think the hard part with us with culinary students is their entitlement when they graduate.
Yeah.
They graduate with a sense of entitlement and their skills really aren't set for real world life. So that affects us. So I opted for military service instead. And
thank you for your service.
Oh, you're welcome. I joined the Navy right before I graduated my senior year of high school. And those are the two key things. So I joined the Navy before I graduated my senior year of high school. I did early enlistment. But my senior year of high school, under my picture in the yearbook, I wrote that I would do 4 years in the military and that I would open my own restaurant.
Wow.
So that was 1989.
And that was, and so by working at the Eagle's Nest, that love of cooking.
Yeah. I mean, I was catering graduation parties.
Yourself?
Yeah.
Okay.
When I was a junior, I was catering senior high graduation parties.
And so what were you cooking? Were you doing lasagnas?
Yeah, meatballs and lasagna and you name it. Potato salad, macaroni salad, all the staples that you. I grew up in South Jersey, so that's what we ate then.
And did you guys call them open houses up there?
No.
Okay. In Michigan, where I'm from, we call them open houses, and I've never heard anybody else.
It's like a drop-in or something?
Yeah, it's just like we're having an open house, and it's like you'd get an invite. It wouldn't say graduation party. It would say open house, but it's a graduation party.
Yeah.
But, it's just, and it's odd. I now live in Tennessee. We don't call them there. But I was wondering, I guess, Jersey graduation party.
No, it's graduation parties, and, I cater that out of my mother's kitchen, and, she caused a little controversy at times, but it was good.
She's like, you're doing what?
Yeah. So that kind of...
That was a great commercial kitchen, I'm sure. Fully licensed.
Yeah, fully licensed. Had everything I needed.
The health score on the wall.
Yeah. But so, so that was that. I entered the military. I entered the Navy right after I graduated high school. And my dad told me, whatever I do, not to volunteer for submarines. And I volunteer for submarines. Because I'm like, all right, there's got to be something I'm missing. If he's telling... you're young.
Saying, don't
if
do
he's
it.
Telling me don't do it,
it's
must
be
fun.
Amazing.
Yeah. So I volunteered for sub duty. I got sent I wanted to cook. And I scored very well on my ASVAB. And the recruiters did everything they could to get me to agree to do something else other than cook.
Okay.
To the point where they actually reached out to my parents. And they're like,
hey,
we need help because he wants to cook, but he can do so much more. And they're like, welcome to our world.
Yeah. Yeah. Welcome to our kitchen.
Yeah.
He's got two graduation parties going right now.
Yeah. So that was it. I did. I went to San Diego for my boot camp and A school, and then I got sent to Groton, Connecticut for submarine school, and then I got stationed in Charleston, and that's never left. Yeah.
And so that's what brought you to Charleston. And so were you cooking on the subs then?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So USS Batfish, 681, a Sturgeon class fast attack.
Okay.
Crew of 130, 100 enlisted and 30 officers.
Okay.
Four meals a day, breakfast, lunch, dinner, and a midnight meal because we, it was
round the clock.
Yeah, it was 8-hour shifts.
Okay.
So we didn't know any different. You're underwater. You know what time it is. You know what day it is.
Doesn't matter.
So they just rolled 3 8-hour shifts so we would have a sense of normalcy. And so we had to feed the guys coming off shift, guys going on shift. So it was good. It was a great experience.
What were you cooking? What was normal?
You name it. I mean... So, some of the favorite meals, we ate very well. The rumor is true. If you're on submarine duty, you eat better than everybody else because there's only one thing to look forward to on a submarine, and
that's the food.
Well, two things, a movie and the food.
Okay.
And we only had, back then we were still burning the Betamax, and we only had about, I think, 45 movies to watch on Betamax. So
you just went through that.
Yeah. If you were on a trip somewhere, you went through those movies real quick.
Yeah.
But we would do, so like Swiss steak. So, you know, we'd get the ribeye sliced and we'd braise it in a tomato and onion, and that was a good one. We did eat, like, ribeyes. You know, we'd slice out ribeyes and cook them up. We did all our own baking from scratch. We did pizza dough for – pizza was our favorite, like, midnight snack. Burgers. We did a lot of burgers. Meatloaf. I mean, you name it. I mean, we did it. But I
imagine that there's something unique about going through that experience on a submarine with 100 – you said 130
guys? 130
guys. 130 guys that makes that bond – probably a little different than somebody who just served in a unit on a base where, you know, they're walking around outside, you know, like you're
the whole submarine brotherhood is unique in its own, to where, you know, when you first report to the submarine, you are not a submariner. So you have to qualify.
Okay.
So in order to qualify to be a submariner, the premise is, if you're the only one left alive, you have to be able to get that sub somewhere safe. Which means you need to know every operating system from front to back.
Yeah.
So you're assigned an older sailor who's been there, who's qualified, and he's your what they call sea dad. My guy was Howard Hofer. Talk about a Ric Flair double. I mean, this guy, he wrestled in high school.
Oh, really?
And he just super nice guy. But, I mean, he
did
would.
Did he have the woo?
Oh,
dude.
He would whoop your ass in a heartbeat. Oh, I mean, no neck, just like. Amazing. He was a machinist. He was a mechanic, a machinist mate, and just, you know.
Didn't need tools.
No.
Just unwrench things with his bare hands, you know.
So he, you know, he took me under his wing, and basically, you know, like say the hydraulic system. You have to know the hydraulic system, and then you have to be able to sit in front of a board of officers and physically draw the hydraulic system on a whiteboard with every cutoff from front to back.
Holy
and then
smokes.
Electrical system. And then, I mean, you name it. It's and then, so that's. You have, they give you 6 months to qualify. And after your 6 months, if you don't qualify, then you get sent to the surface fleet. So,
wow.
But I managed to qualify.
Yeah.
So I got to stay. I got my dolphins, what they call the submarine insignia, which is dolphins. And so that's the first piece of that, is that link. You know, there's not a lot of guys who can say they're submariners.
Yeah.
And then, The other important thing you learn is you better cook, or you're going to get your ass beat.
Okay.
Because that's the only thing these guys have to look forward to.
Yeah.
And if you can't cook, they're going to let you know about it.
Yeah.
And so that's another area where I won out real fast. Like, I could cook, so I kind of rose to the top, and
everybody liked.
I became everybody's friend.
Yeah. When they knew that Anthony was was there cooking, they knew the meal was going to be good. That's crazy. So that ultimately brought you to Charleston, you said.
Yeah, that got me to Charleston. And
you never left.
Nope. So 1994, I walked off the submarines for the last time. I enrolled at Johnson & Wales.
Okay.
And I lasted 4 days.
Good for you.
Nice. My first class was dining room, and I was 6:30 in the morning standing in line for inspection with my uniform. And I got creases. I mean, you could cut your finger on my creases. And then the three kids next to me just pulled theirs out from their back seat of their car, and nobody's saying anything to them.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what? Maybe this isn't for me.
Yeah.
And so it was really hard for me. That was a tough transition from the structured military life to college life.
Yeah.
And so that was it. Then I was building mattresses during the day at Southern Lady Mattress Factory.
Okay.
And I was working Blossom Cafe at night.
Okay.
So, and that's another full circle piece to this. The guy that hired me in 1994 at Blossom Cafe is now my director of operations.
Wow.
Okay. Full circle.
So where was it at your time in Charleston once you came there that you started to be around smoke?
No. So I made my Blossoms was semi-fine dining.
Yeah.
And I made my way through the fine dining scene. So that was when I was being my chef self.
Okay.
You know, I had my boxes that I wanted to check. And
Charleston's an amazing food town.
Yeah, and this was right at the launch of the restaurant, you know, revolution in Charleston, the early 90s. I mean, everything was just coming on board, and we were starting to get notoriety. And so that was Blossoms. And then I went down and took over the old hotel at Keough Island.
Oh,
and we were a two-diamond facility at the time. And our goal was to take it to a Four Diamond facility so they could get the approval to build the new hotel.
Okay.
So I did that. It took 4 years,
yeah,
but we managed to get it from Two Diamond to Four Diamond. So that was another one of those boxes checked.
Yeah.
And that was one of the major turning points in my career. That was a day going to the hostess stand to check reservations. There was a family of four that was in the lobby looking at the menu, and I overheard the daughter say to the father, "It's okay if we can't afford to eat here."
Oh God!
And I'm like, well, "What have I become? You know, what am I?" Because I certainly didn't grow up this way. You know, I needed to. I really did a self-check.
Yeah. So for those of you that we're not videoing this, but you just said that sentence. There was an emotion in you.
Yeah. It changed my whole trajectory.
Yeah. There was an emotion in me. Like you did. Yeah. You know, I cry really easy.
Yeah.
You know?
Me too.
Yeah. Great.
Too. Especially when I'm tired.
Yeah. And you're tired.
I'm a little tired.
I got great sleep last night, by the way.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, like, yeah. So the.
That's
such a wow turning point.
Yeah.
In essence, you said okay.
So I went in. 2 weeks later, I resigned, and I went on board.
They're probably what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like why?
I went on board with a local group called the Mustard Seed, who every Sunday closed every Sunday, you know. And my son was just born right before this too, so we closed every Sunday, and then the average plate was $12 to $14.
Yeah.
Value-driven, family-friendly.
Yep.
He had two locations at the time. I went on board with him. I helped him grow. I opened up an Italian concept for him. Then we opened up Meat and Three, like diner concept. And that was 8 years worth of my career there. And then another local group opened up a place on the beach called Rita's Seaside Grill, which was burgers and beer and seafood. Excuse me. And then... they offered me an operating partnership.
Okay.
So I went down with them, and I became their operating partner. That was 2009. 2013, the Halls Dining Group bought them out. The Halls Dining Group.
Legendary.
Fine dining.
Yep.
Not where I wanted to be.
Yeah.
So I signed a contract with them to teach them how to run Rita's for 3 months.
Okay.
And during that time, I found the original location for Swig and Swine. And so during my time at Rita's is when I started to play with smoke.
Okay.
We had a smoker out back, and I introduced brisket to the menu, wings, pork butt.
And so, but where did you, like, what made you think, like, I can do this? Were you around, had you gone to Texas? Had you just been around other folks in the Carolinas?
I just went to Texas for the first time in March.
No way.
Yeah, I've never been.
Are you serious?
Never been to Texas. I went for the first time in March. So it just, you know, obviously you're in South Carolina, so there's barbecue everywhere.
Sure.
But like I said, it.
So you knew what it should taste like.
I approached it all from a food standpoint. Like I approached it all, it's a brisket. There's multiple ways to cook a brisket.
Yeah.
So I'm going to teach myself how to cook a brisket this way. And that's how I fell in love with smoke, because it was a whole different, it was something new for me.
Yeah.
You know, it's just taking the same food that I've been working with for years, just doing it in a different fashion.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what launched the barbecue thing.
So Swig and Swine, so then 3 months later.
Yeah, so I signed the deal, or the lease. A guy that I, Steve Kish, who owns 82 Queen in Charleston, longtime friend and mentor, he had approached me about operating or a management contract at another restaurant in Charleston. And I said, let me show you what I'm thinking. And I kind of laid out Swig and Swine in front of him. And he's like, I like that idea. He said, let's do that.
Yeah.
So I partnered up with him and his son. I went 50%. They went 50. And we opened the first Swig and Swine in 2014.
Wow.
So I didn't have any money. I mean, I'm a chef.
You brought the concept and the food side of things.
Well,
you
know, I brought money too. So here's the other. So
okay.
I called my parents. And I'm like, hey, I have this opportunity. This could be it.
Okay.
I said, I need $35,000. Or I said, how much can I borrow?
Yeah.
And they said, we have $35,000. I said, but you're going to have to ask your sisters if it's okay if you borrow it, because it's theirs too.
Oh,
because it was basically
the inheritance.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I did that. And I was still short because I needed 50.
Okay.
So then I called my sisters back, and I got five from each of them. And that was September of 2013. So then between September of 2013 and May of 2014, I catered on the weekends to try to
make
hustle.
Make that other $5,000. Yeah. You had to bring, yeah.
So make some money just to pay bills. I'm building this restaurant out with no paycheck.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm building a restaurant out, no income coming in. Have a child, you know. And then actually two children by this point. And then so that was it. So in 2014, May 27th, mm-hmm. is when we opened the first Swig and Swing.
Okay.
And then we opened, it was great. But you know, the one thing somebody asked me the other day, what would you do? What advice would you give somebody opening a barbecue restaurant?
Yeah.
And that would be to not read the reviews. Because talk about just tearing yourself down, just reading reviews from people.
Especially a guy with low self-esteem.
Yeah, exactly.
As we've established very early on.
You know, especially in
and who can cry easily.
And in South Carolina. I mean, every review. Well, this is not how my uncle cooked it, and this is not how my granddaddy cooked it. And I'm like, all right, well, you know.
So what would you say is your, how would you describe your flavor profile? Because it sounds to me like maybe people were saying that's not traditional Carolina
right.
barbecue.
So we don't sauce anything. We take more of a Texas approach, salt, okay. pepper.
Because you have a deep history with Texas.
Yeah.
You went there once last March, you know, this past March. So,
but it was back to that whole food thing. You know,
you wanted people to taste.
Looked at each individual piece of meat, and I decided the best way to cook that piece of meat.
Okay.
And to me, it was just like they were doing in Texas, salt, yep. pepper. And we have five sauces on the table. You got your vinegar, your mustard, your sweet red, your spicy red, and then your Alabama white.
Yep.
So everybody had their pick on the table. So that was 2014. And then 2 years later, we opened number two,
yeah.
in Somerville, South Carolina. And then 2 years after that, we opened number three in Mount Pleasant, South Carolina. So.
And I know you're about to open two more, you said, right?
Three
more, okay. What's that struggle like? Because I think there's a lot of, in barbecue, I think this is going to be outsider perspective. I feel like sometimes in barbecue, the taking it beyond that initial brick and mortar is very tough because it's around one guy, one gal, who is the pit master that is creating that food, and when they try to scale it, you lose something. What have you guys done? Because that's you've skipped that part. That doesn't seem to have affected you. So what makes you be able to scale and be able to say we're going to open three more and not be worried maybe about
the team?
The team.
And I tell you what solidified our team, and it's a big part of the story. 2019, I bought my partners out.
Okay.
And we were supposed to close on the deal in summer of 2019.
Yeah.
And in order to do so, I had to go to the SBA. I had to borrow, you know, $1.8 million from the SBA to buy them out.
Good grief.
And in my mind, I had to empty the bank accounts to get the down payment together for the SBA loan. And I knew that if we did the deal in the summer, I'd have enough time to build those accounts back up before January, February.
Winter in Charlotte.
Yeah, it's notoriously slow. So I was confident. We closed Friday, December 13th in December.
Okay, perfect.
I walked away from the closing table with $70,000 to split between three restaurants to get through the two slowest months of the year.
Yep.
And then COVID hit.
Yeah.
So we had to lay off all of our hourly employees, go to go only, and every one of our salaried managers staffed their stores, and we just divided the team and we set out to conquer. We did, you know, I called everybody in a room. We didn't know what we were going to do. Nobody did.
Yeah.
But the one thing we could not afford to do was shut down.
Yeah.
Because I had that SBA loan to pay off.
Yep.
I didn't want to fall behind on rents because I knew it was going to be real hard to come back with the SBA loan added on to everything.
Right.
So we turned around, we went to go only. And remember, that was when toilet paper was short, paper towels were short, eggs, milk.
Yeah.
We moved refrigerators into our bar areas, and we turned our bars into bodegas.
So when you came in to get your to-go order,
some
you had
sundries,
toilet paper, paper towels, milk, eggs, cheese, whatever you needed.
Yeah.
And we had budgeted, if we could do 10,000 a week per store, three stores at the time, if we could do 10,000 a week per store, we'd have enough to pay salary managers, and we'd have enough to pay the SBA loan and rent.
And rent.
And we'd be okay.
Yep.
First week, we did 30,000 per store.
Okay.
Blew it out of the water.
Yeah.
So turned around, we took, paid all our bills, took everything that was left, and we bought $100 gift cards to Harris Teeter grocery stores for all of our hourly employees that we laid off.
Wow.
And so on Friday, instead of them coming to collect a check, they came to collect gift cards to take home.
Get through, help get them by.
And we did that for a number of weeks. I want to say maybe 10 weeks.
Wow.
Kingsford found out what we were doing, and Kingsford sent us a check for $25,000 to continue to do that for our team.
Just to help.
Yeah. So that was, you know, but that, I really feel that those 3 months really solidified my management team.
Yeah.
And I think they saw the leader and they gravitated towards it.
Yeah.
And I think that's what did it for me. That won them over.
Yeah. How many folks do you think, like, percentage wise are still with you, from 2020? Obviously you've had to add more, but I mean, like, those poor people, are they still hanging around?
Yeah. I'd say there's at least 75.
Wow.
Percent.
That's amazing.
Percent. I still have a, we call them the Golden Girls. There's three women that work at the original location that have been there since day one.
Wow.
Yeah.
But do you find, you know, you mentioned that day one, you know, walking into culinary school, being there for inspection, creased whites, you know, you're ready to go. Do you still see today your military background and influence kind of showing up? And does it show up in
more
in a healthy way?
No.
Or, okay.
It shows up in more of the sarcasm. Just my
Submariner sarcasm.
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, I tell you what, though. And there's so many, you know, when I look back on things, there's so many things that happened over time that just make it all work. And my VP is an Air Force veteran, and my director of operations is an Army veteran.
Okay.
So when I communicate sharply with them, they don't get offended. It's the fastest way to communicate.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what you're trained in the military. You're trained the fastest, most effective way to communicate, and that's what we do. And so if I say something off the hip, you know, it's not harsh. It's that's ingrained in me.
Right.
And they get it.
Yeah. There's some, and they're,
so no feathers get ruffled.
Right. They understand that it's truth, that it's not meant to harm.
Right.
And it's just, and they're, it kind of takes, it's probably comforting at some level for them that it's not somebody dancing around and trying to make this this really quick, hey, let's do this, versus, well, what if we, you know.
Yeah, the only smoke that happens at our place is from the smokers. We definitely don't try to hide anything emotionally or you know, we don't dance around issues. We tend to tackle things as soon as they appear.
When you mentioned earlier kind of one of your core values being hospitality, what's that look like? You know, because you come from that fine dining experience, fine dining side, where hospitality had a very different feel. People were coming in, spending a lot of money, were expecting to be waited on in a certain way, white glove service, you know, whatever. What does hospitality mean to Swig & Swine?
All of our restaurants are full service.
Okay.
So we're full service.
Okay.
To the core. We, you know, you come in and the first person that you see is a hostess.
Okay.
Or a host, and they're greeting you with a smile and a hello and taking you to your table and handing you off to your server, who's then going to take you and treat you like a guest. And one of my golden girls, Joanne, at the West Ashley location, the original location, she's the one who taught me years ago that these people are your guests. They're not customers.
Yeah.
So,
and even just that vernacular,
that,
hey, we have six customers just came in. No, we have six guests.
Six guests. And it kind of changes the whole mental state of things, really, when you think about it.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know if you know this book. I love it. It's about hospitality. It's called Unreasonable Hospitality. I don't know if you're a reader or if you listen to books, but it's written by a guy named Will Gadara. Will was GM of 11 Madison Park in New York City when it became the number one restaurant in the world. Great guy, amazing book. You might want to listen to it, and it would be just something for maybe your leadership team.
Is that the story where he went down the street to get something for a customer that wanted a cake or something, and went out of there, or pizza. I think it was a pizza.
Yeah.
They had a customer at the table that was in New York City but hadn't experienced New York City pizza.
Hot dog.
That's what it was. He went to the cart.
What they did is they went and got a New York hot dog in that nasty water, brought it in, told the chef, do this. They kind of did a little – Madison parked it a little bit and then gave them that bite. But that's the genesis of that that hospitality for him is stories like that. But it's so much more. But I recommend that book to everybody.
Yeah.
Anybody listening to the podcast, if you're in customer service at any level, that book is just amazing. All right, so let's talk a little bit. You've got three things getting ready to open. Let people know kind of what's coming up for Swig and Swine.
We got Swig and Swine Monk's Corner, South Carolina, which is about 50 minutes outside Charleston on the lake. It's on a diversion canal that ties to a dam, and you can ride the lock system up to the lake.
Very cool.
Yeah, so we're 200 or 300 yards from the actual lock system. It's a great springtime. Will be hot. We got a courtesy dock out in front of the restaurant, and we'll have, you know, the boat traffic up there is crazy. And then we have Swig and Swine Myrtle Beach.
Okay.
Coming on board, hopefully mid December.
Okay.
So that's when I get back from Tampa. That's on the
to-do list.
That's on the top of the to-do list after Thanksgiving. And then we have another location in Charleston that I cannot disclose at this time.
Ooh, I like it.
Yeah.
I like it a
lot. So hopefully in the next couple weeks I'll be able to disclose. But
very cool.
But that's going to happen really quick. So
in addition to juggling all this, 160 team members, which the addition of three additional restaurants will take you well over 200, I imagine.
Yeah, we might even double that.
Yeah. You're involved in a little festival yourself, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we have a little festival in Charleston.
And
we started.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
What made you start Holy Smokes?
So Aaron from Home Team Barbecue, him and I were actually doing helping Ed Randolph, Handsome Devil Barbecue.
Okay.
Out of New York City. He was here doing a book. He was in Charleston doing a book tour a few years ago.
Okay.
And we did it at Aaron's place. And Aaron and I both have recipes in the book. So we were there together with him doing the book signing. And Aaron and I started to talk. And he started to talk that he thought that Charleston needed its own barbecue festival.
Yeah, absolutely. And a wonderful food and wine festival that's just amazing.
And so we started throwing ideas back and forth, but nothing concrete. And then in 2020, our other two partners, we formed a little company called Q Events to host this thing. But John Davis and Joe Norton approached me about a piece of property they had that needed to get used. It was being used for a few weddings and here and there, but they really wanted to showcase this property and they wanted some type of festival to happen there.
Yeah.
And I said, hold the phone. I said, let me get Aaron involved with this because I think we have something.
Yeah.
And that's what launched Holy Smokes. So Aaron and I kind of took the lead on that, and the first thing we did was go through our list of friends who owe us favors and who we may have gone and done an event for.
Absolutely.
A time or two.
Yeah.
And those were the first 24. So
time to pay up people.
So the first year of Holy Smokes, we started with 24 pitmasters. and, from a business standpoint, we're like, well, how are we going to sell these tickets?
Yeah.
We need big names to sell tickets.
Yep.
So we called Sam Jones. We called Pat Martin. We called Chris Lilly. We called Carrie Bringle, Peg Leg Porker.
Yep. Love
and
Carrie.
Then we called the Texas boys. We called Arnis from Evie Mays. We called Patrick and Aaron from Fijis in Houston. Yeah. We called Leonard from Truth.
Yeah.
Everybody was on board, and that's kind of what kicked off Fox Brothers out of Atlanta, Southern Soul Barbecue. And those are good friends of ours anyway, so we knew they would do it.
Yep.
And that kicked off the first Holy Smokes. So first year, we did 24 pitmasters. We sold 3,500 tickets. And at the end of the day, we raised $100,000. So it's a complete nonprofit.
Yep.
We don't profit anything. We cover our cost, and then we put away $25,000 seed money for the following year to get us off the ground.
And get going. And
then we So we managed to get $100,000 off the first event, and then we split it down the middle, $50,000 to Ronald McDonald House, $50,000 to Hogs for the Cause. And then the second year, we grew that list. So this will tell you how well we did with that event. 30 minutes into the event, we hadn't even opened the gates yet. I was helping Chris Lilly cook his Alabama white chicken.
Yeah.
And he looked at me and he said, "Anthony, I do a ton of events." He said, "This is the most well-run, organized event that I've ever been a part of.
Wow.
I want to come back next year."
You're
so
done. Okay.
That 24, boom, everybody signed back up for the next year. So we added a few more. So we went to 36 for the second year.
Nice. And you just did your third, right?
Yeah. So the second year we came out with $180,000.
Amazing.
Split that down the middle. $90,000. Ronald McDonald House of Charleston was able to renovate every bathroom in the house with the $90,000 we gave them. And then Hogs for the Cause, we gave them $90,000. Aaron and his guys have been involved with Hogs for the Cause since 2014, myself and my team since 2016. Over the course of those years, together we've donated over $500,000 to Hogs for the Cause. So those guys recognized that, and we went to Greenville to Prisma Children's Hospital a couple months ago, and we donated $1 million to kick off the building of a hematology oncology unit that's been designed by parents that have gone through the battle. So, I mean, just, you know, so third year of Holy Smokes, we went to 52 Pitmasters this year.
Wow.
And we have yet to close out the books from this year, so we don't know how much we raised, but we're hoping. The weather was a little iffy, but we still managed a near sellout, even with a shitty weather. But
nice.
Hopefully we'll do well.
You know, it's, I love that part of your story because it takes it beyond just a guy who's really good at cooking food, who understands systems, who has an ability to get people to follow him, and then you give back in this way. I mean, you just rattled off a lot of numbers, and behind each of those numbers are lives that are being changed. And that's just
Holy Smokes.
Right.
I mean, that's not, you know, one of the things I'm probably the most proud of is we do a thing called Friends Cooking with Friends.
Okay.
Through Swiggin's Wine. And we started that 2 years ago. We had a young girl in our neighborhood, in my personal neighborhood. She had cancer. She was scheduled for an operation at MUSC, I think in August. The doctor retired.
Mm.
So they had to reschedule her operation because there's only so many doctors that did this.
Didn't even do that surgery.
So they had to send her to St. Jude in Memphis. So the mother and father had to take all this time off work to go there. So I reached out to the grandfather, and the grandparents had moved into our neighborhood as well to help the family through this.
Mm-hmm.
So I reached out to the grandfather. And I said, "Hey, you know, we'd really like to help, you know, but I don't want to offend anybody because it's a touchy, you know, some people take a lot of pride."
Yeah, that we got it. Don't
you? And so he's like, "Well, let me reach out, you know, to the parents, and I'll let you know." So they agreed. They just wanted to be anonymous. And I'm like, no problem. So we raised money. We went to our pool, our neighborhood pool, and I have a group. We have a little golf cart militia, we call it. It's the Bolton's Landing Golf Cart Militia.
It's a very, very South Carolina, very
South
Charleston
Carolina
thing.
But I tell you what, these are 12 guys who, at the drop of a hat, will do whatever. So we did. We cooked two pigs.
That's all right, dude.
Yeah,
I love it.
And
you're tired.
Yeah.
And I don't help either.
We wrote that family check for $15,000.
Oh, that's amazing.
From two pigs.
Yeah. Those are some good pigs.
Yeah.
Those might have been the best pigs you ever made. These might have tasted good, but those might have been the best pigs you ever made.
But, you know, it just goes to show that for years, years ago I realized that, you know, what we do, we can do so much just with, you know, everybody's given a gift, and it's what you do with that gift that makes a difference.
Yeah.
And we cook.
Yeah. And the Lord has obviously blessed you with this and given you the opportunity to help people. And the way that you've leaned into that and embraced it and cooked pigs for a cause in so many ways. Even here today, it's all for a cause. You know, it's...
Yeah,
it's remarkable.
It's you know, it's just it still amazes me that we could take two pigs, cook it, sell it at our neighborhood pool in 2 hours, and
make 15 grand.
Raise 15 grand for the family. I mean, what else can you do?
Right.
You know, and that's how I got there, because I could never afford to stroke that check myself.
Yeah.
You know, and then I realized that even if I could do that, what good is that? You know, because you're not making anybody else aware of what's going on,
or giving other people the opportunity to be a part of this story.
Exactly.
To be a part of that 15,000, to be in their own way sharing that story of what happened at the pool that day.
Yeah.
They didn't cook those pigs necessarily, but they were part of that little movement.
They pulled them. I didn't pull a single pig that day. I said, boys, glove up. You're pulling pigs.
They're like, we don't know what we're doing.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so they got a crash course.
That's the easy part. Yeah. That's the easy part.
Yeah.
Well, this has been amazing. I love your heart. I love the fact that I got to taste some of your pig today. It was wonderful. Before we go, there's always a couple little bonus questions that I ask. May the Smoke Be With You obviously has a little bit of an homage, a nod to Star Wars, obviously. Are you a Star Wars fan? Did you grow up with it?
I am. I told you last night my birthday is May the 4th.
That's right.
May
That's
the 4th
right.
be with you.
Yes, and
I have
also
the,
with you.
I have the best birthday ever.
Yeah,
huge Star Wars fan.
What movie's your favorite?
The original.
Episode one.
Episode one?
Yeah. Love it.
I mean, that was, if I'm not mistaken... I'm actually embarrassed to say this, but my three older sisters. So by the time I came along, they were all doing their own thing. And my dad never went to the movies with my mother because he hated going to the movies.
Okay.
But the first movie I ever went to see in a movie theater was On Golden Pond.
Oh, my. Oh.
My mother took me.
but I remember that was
a good movie.
And it also was, that's crazy you mentioned that. That was a movement. On Golden Pond... It was Henry Fonda.
Yeah.
It was, like, everybody saw it.
Yeah.
So moms were taking kids to see this movie. No, you're right. That's funny. So
But the second movie I ever saw in the movie theater was Star Wars.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Good. Favorite character?
I'm a big Chewie fan.
Yeah.
My son actually has my son's nickname, and he got the nickname in high school, Lumpy.
Okay.
Because that was Chewie's nickname. And he's got the lumpy tattoo across his stomach.
That's great.
It's pretty funny.
That's cool. If you're out smoking, maybe you're at home and you're cooking, it's a long day, what are you listening to? What's on the...
Usually some Allman Brothers.
Okay.
Like I like the Allman Brothers on Pandora.
Classic,
or,
yep.
Yeah. Or Amazon Music, just mix it up with Allman Brothers and...
Let them feed you something in the algorithm that's probably in the same genre, and you like
and
it.
Government Mule,
okay,
you know that, that right there.
Cool. And then, what are you drinking? What's your favorite kind of go-to?
You know, I quit drinking 3 years ago.
All right.
Yeah. So now it's
flat or sparkling.
It is the bubbly water from Walmart.
I love
it. The flavored water
bubbly
from Walmart.
Yeah. Great.
It's a coconut, pineapple coconut.
All right.
Is my go-to. We can never find it. My wife scours the internet.
If she sees it, she
scours the internet for me to try to find it and buy it. But right now, I'm on the orange and the black cherry are my two new favorites.
If anybody has a connection to some pineapple
coconut pineapple water from Walmart,
let Anthony at Swig
and Swan
know.
It's not that expensive.
No. Yeah, please help a brother out here. Help a brother out. Well, this was great. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
This was.
I'm glad we connected. Thanks for reaching out.
This is a great conversation.
Yeah.
And may the smoke be with you.
Yeah, maybe after we get these three open, we'll do part two.
I would love it. I'd love to come see you.
Yeah, come see us in Myrtle Beach. That'll be a fun one.
All right, sounds good.
Good seeing you.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks for listening to the May the Smoke Be With You podcast with Joe Levitt.